Welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here, we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, today marks the second anniversary of the shooting at Appalachee High School in Winder. Two more Georgia law enforcement officers have been arrested for allegedly misusing flock camera technology. An extreme heat is expected as the college football season gets underway this weekend. Fans heading to games are being urged to take precautions.
Stay hydrated. You know, stay out of the sun, and I know that's going to be challenging at the game.
Today is Friday, September 4th. I'm Peter Biello, and this is Georgia Today. Today marks the second anniversary of the shooting at Appalachee High School in Winder. It comes a month after shooter Colt Gray was sentenced to life without parole for the murders of Richard Aspinwall, Christina Iremi, Christian Angulo, and Mason Schermerhorn. Governor Brian Kemp addressed the anniversary at the Capitol yesterday, speaking to the families of the victims and to law enforcement. Barrow County students are off today ahead of the Labor Day weekend, and the county school system also is offering free mental health counseling throughout the month. The Richmond County Sheriff's Office says it has arrested two of its own for allegedly misusing flock camera technology. Investigator Sean Morrow and Deputy Jose Ferrer were arrested last month. They were charged with misuse of captured license plate data and violation of oath by a public officer. No other details were released. This follows the GBI's arrest of a Clayton County Sheriff's Office deputy on similar allegations and several other previous instances throughout the state of law enforcement inappropriately accessing flock camera data. The cameras sold by Atlanta-based Flock Safety are, according to the company, running in 6,000 communities in every state but Alaska. Labor Day weekend travel is underway across Georgia, and drivers should expect heavier traffic and higher prices at the pump. AAA says today is expected to be one of the busiest days, with the worst congestion between noon and 8 o'clock tonight. Gas is also significantly more expensive than last Labor Day. AAA says regular gas in Georgia is averaging about $3.90 a gallon, and that is nearly a dollar more than this time last year. Officials are urging travelers to leave early and allow extra travel time. The Atlanta Regional Commission is sharing its long-term housing plan to address the growing regional affordability crisis. GPB's Amanda Andrews has more.
Housing Forward 2035 sets goals for all 11 member counties of the Atlanta Regional Commission. The three focus areas are keeping up with population growth, developing low-income housing, and addressing vacant properties. Anna Roach is CEO of the commission. She says data shows what's expected to happen if they don't make progress on affordability.
By 2035, 75% of the people making less than $55,000 a year won't have a housing solution to speak of. 75% of those people.
The goal is to build 367,000 units of housing, with half being affordable to people making 80% of the area median income. That's around $94,000 a year for a family of four. For GPB News, I'm Amanda Andrews.
A partnership between the Georgia Council for Recovery and Georgia Southern and Augusta Universities is working to educate employers around the state about supporting people in recovery from substance use disorder. GPB's Ellen Eldridge has more.
The Georgia Recovery Ready Workplace, or GROW, informs employers on best practices for building supportive work environments. Brian Kite is with the council. He says they also show
how to better support individuals that may be experiencing substance use challenges in the workplace or at home or their family members, but also getting gainful employment to individuals that are in recovery or seeking recovery.
Beginning with 10 local recovery community organizations, GROW will help Georgians in recovery find opportunities for stable, meaningful work and long-term success. For GPB News, I'm Ellen Eldridge.
A government-contracted project management company is laying off 77 workers at its office at Georgia's Fort Gordon. In its notice to the state, Amentum says the government has eliminated its contract. Amentum says most of the positions are guards and alarm monitors. The layoffs take effect at the end of October. Atlanta-based Delta Airlines says it will match the $1,000 federal contribution to Trump accounts for eligible children of employees. The company says it's an effort to invest in Delta's employees and their financial well-being. Trump accounts were created under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act as investment accounts for children born during the second Trump administration. Pat Mitchell has spent decades creating opportunities for others. She rose from reporting and anchoring to become president of CNN Productions and the first woman president and CEO of both PBS and the Paley Center for Media. Along the way, Mitchell became known not only for breaking barriers herself, but for helping other women move through them. Today, the author and Georgia native continues that work through TED Women and Project Dandelion, a global woman-led climate justice campaign. She was honored earlier this week for her accomplishments by National Jewish Health and its Legends of Atlanta Gala. She spoke with GPB's Pamela Kirkland.
First of all, congratulations on this honor. I was told your husband says you don't like being called a legend necessarily. Is he right?
You know, all those words come with so much baggage or reinterpretations or pre-interpretations. Legend, icon. Oh, the one I really don't like is pioneer. I always get that image of, you know, the woman in the long flower dress walking alongside the wagon. Although, thank goodness we had pioneer women. Nonetheless, grateful for it.
You grew up in rural Georgia. You grew up in Swainsboro. When you think back to when you were a girl, could you have imagined having done all of this?
Oh, goodness, no. My boundaries were very limited. If you grew up as a girl in the South in the 50s, as I did, I mean, you just didn't have many opportunities. And so we always saw ourselves within a certain path, but it never felt like the right path for me. And I had a grandmother who encouraged me to go outside those expectations and expect a lot more of myself. And then I had an eighth grade teacher, you know, one of those mentors who began to help me believe in my own dreams and then find the pathway towards them, you know, getting a scholarship, getting to college. So I could not have been here or anywhere else without those people who early on believed in me and gave me that little push we all need to say, you don't have to fit into anyone else's definition of what your life can be.
There was also a lot going on. It was the age of the civil rights movement, also women's rights movement. How did those kind of shape your transition from teaching to eventually getting into the journalism track?
Those two social justice movements totally shaped the rest of my life. And you know how fortunate in many ways that I would have come of political age at the time when this country was going through such dramatic and important changes, and at the University of Georgia to be in that freshman class with Charlene Hunter Gault, and who happened to live in my dorm. And so we became friends, and watching the struggles that she went through and understanding that at some deep personal friend-to-friend basis, as well as having grown up seeing the injustices everywhere, that really activated me in a way that has remained a very real part of all my work. And then the women's movement was starting too. And that came at a time when I, as a young married woman, had to face a divorce, which was very unheard of in the South. So that movement also gave me the kind of wind beneath my wings, you know, as I was thinking, what is possible for me if with these two dramatic changes going on, how can I be a part of them? And being a part of them really shaped the rest of my life.
In the 1980s, you left a secure job at NBC to start Woman to Woman. Did it feel like a risky decision for you at the time?
Very. Everyone. In fact, my agent fired me. My agent said, if you're going to make that kind of dumb decision, you're going to leave a big network job where you're on this fast track to go and start a show in syndication about women. No. He said, I really can't represent you anymore. So when I went to do Woman to Woman, I actually didn't have representation for the first time in my career in media. But I knew it was a risk, Pamela, and I can't say that I took it frivolously because I had a son, you know, still the sole supporter. But I also, by that time, like most of us, I had enough confidence in what I knew how to do, and I had a lot more experience. So I thought the worst is I can get another.
Your work today includes Project Dandelion, which is a global campaign that puts women at the center of climate justice. What made climate change feel like the issue that demanded your attention right now?
I was working with women leaders all over the world in a group of forums that we call Connected Women Leaders. And we put these women in a room who didn't know each other, but who had different levels of leadership all over the world. And we give them a problem, and they would come up with some new idea and innovation. And in that process, I had met the former, I actually already knew the former president of Ireland, the first woman president, Mary Robinson, because I had done a documentary on her when she ran for the presidency in 1990, and we'd stayed in touch. And she was in one of these groups, and we were trying to look at global health and what was going on, challenges due to the climate crisis. We were looking at food insecurity, and then, of course, the nature and climate emergency being felt everywhere. And Mary stood up, and she looked at all of us around the table, and she said, you know, no matter what your issue is, whether it's rights for children, rights for refugees, whether it's food security, farming, whatever you are fighting in your life to make better, we have to have a habitable, healthy world in order to do that. And that just clicked for me. I thought everything I have tried and spent time and energy focused on trying to change and make better had to have a healthy environment in which to nourish it. So that's why Project Dandelion became the culmination of all that Connected Women Leaders work.
Pat Mitchell is co-founder of Project Dandelion and this year's Legends of Atlanta honoree. Thank you so much for speaking with me in the studio.
Thank you very much for the time.
That was GPB's Pamela Kirkland speaking with Pat Mitchell. The Georgia Bulldogs kick off their 2026 football season tomorrow in extreme heat. GPB's Chase McGee has more on how to stay safe on game day.
Kickoff is scheduled for 3 p.m. when high humidity and high pressure will bring Saturday's heat index into the triple digits around the state, just in time for tens of thousands of Georgia fans to spend hours outside in Athens. Andrew Grunstein is a professor studying heat vulnerability at UGA. He warns fans to practice caution.
Stay hydrated. You know, stay out of the sun. And I know that's going to be challenging at the game. But if you start not feeling well, right, try to, you know, get into a cooler location or get medical attention.
The University of Georgia Athletic Association is also urging fans to stay hydrated, limit strenuous outdoor activities in the afternoon, and stay in the shade as much as possible. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Also in college football, Georgia Tech dropped its season opener against Colorado yesterday after the Buffaloes took the lead in the last minute of the fourth quarter, final score 14-13. They were led to victory by former Atlanta Falcons star Deion Sanders, now Colorado's coach. Sanders said his team, despite trailing all second half, never lost hope. Atlanta's 74% humidity didn't impact fan attendance, with nearly 52,000 fans packing Bobby Dodd Stadium's third consecutive sellout. The humidity helped contribute to ball control issues for Georgia Tech, who fumbled three times in the first half, losing one. And that is it for this edition of Georgia Today. If you want to learn more about any of these stories, visit gpb.org/news. And remember to subscribe to this podcast. We're going to take the Labor Day holiday off, but we will be back in your feed on Tuesday afternoon. And if you've got feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Email us. The address is georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks again for listening, and have a great weekend.